All right. As I mentioned, this is a committee group work, so I want to acknowledge my cohorts here and share the blame with them, mainly share the blame. And when we first came up with this idea, it was about two or three years ago. The board and some of the other folks started tossing around the idea of, is there a need to come up with a peer review system for teaching and extension materials that might be of assistance, particularly to junior faculty as they're moving up through the ranks, in terms of being able to document the quality of their materials for tenure and promotion prospects. And so about a year ago, Mary Meyer charged me with taking a group of folks and getting together and trying to come up with a way that we would be able to move forward on this. And so we got our group of cohorts, and we were all very excited about the prospects, and we began to move forward, and we began to head on down that Mary Lane. And we got into, what was it, a meeting about October or November of last year. And it became apparent to us that while we were very enthusiastic about this, that we weren't quite sure we had all the questions answered that we might need answers to. And so, with the help of Dr. Rodas and Mike Neff, we went forward and began to develop a series of questions for a survey instrument that we could administer to ASHS members as well as non-members, and try to answer a few of these questions. What were some of the due diligence questions we probably needed to find out? Well, who was going to be our contributors and our users to the system? Is there a need? Was there an alternative, such as Marlowe, that's out there that might serve as an alternative, although they may not have the expertise that ASHS does? What kind of materials would we review in this process? What would be the structure of the review process? And how would we archive the materials and recognize them as being peer-reviewed materials? There was also the issues related to the value of this. Okay, who are we going to be serving? Is it our current membership? Are we going to try and attract new membership with this? How were we going to pay for all of this? What was going to be the potential revenue stream that would finance this and undertake it? And if it does, at what point did we reach a break even on projections? Okay. So we kindly got the survey going with Dr. Rodas's help. We got it out, and we had 506 people respond. That's pretty good response to it. And a number of the things we wanted to know, first of all, who were we getting information in from? And it turns out that of the survey respondents, about 70% of them were coming from land-grant universities. And the next two highest groups were other institutions of higher education and federal government employees. Of course, we had a smattering of things from everything from nonprofit to industry partners, et cetera, that responded. Now, one of you might be real quick with numbers there and say, hey, that doesn't add up to 506, okay? Well, not everybody answered every question. So however many answered that question are the numbers that we have there. One of the questions we did ask them is production of peer-reviewed scholarly work expected as a part of your job responsibilities? And three-quarters of the people that responded did indicate that that was a part of their expectations of their job responsibilities. We also wanted to know who we were getting the answers from, and it turns out that the bulk of them were from the American Society for Horticultural Sciences as members. So mostly we were getting information back from the membership, a little bit for non-members. Okay. Just breaking that down a little bit, who was responding, it was mostly tenure-track faculty with a secondary group coming from non-tenure-track faculty and to some extent staff and other folks. So mostly it was those involved directly in teaching, research, and extension that were responding to the survey. One of the things we said, well, if you are a member of ASHS, would access to peer-reviewed teaching, extension, or outreach materials provide added value to your membership? And 85% of the folks responding to the survey did indicate that that would provide an added value to their membership. So that was good news, and only 11% didn't think so. Something we were interested also, would this be a draw for folks who weren't members of ASHS? And so we looked at those folks who answered the survey as not a member of ASHS, and we asked them, would access to the peer-reviewed teaching, extension, and outreach materials encourage you to join ASHS? And the good news is, while it was a small sample size, 80% of the people did indicate that that would be a motivating factor to help get them to join ASHS. So that's a positive note for the system. We also then said, well, if you're thinking about authoring peer-reviewed journal articles for teaching, do you think that that would be helpful in the promotion and tenure process at your institution? And it turns out that the majority of folks did feel that it would be a helpful thing to do for promotion and tenure at their institutions. And about 25%, or about a quarter of the folks, weren't sure. So there was only about 10% that really felt that it would not be helpful in that process. Well, we looked at who was in the survey. We looked at what their thoughts were about some of the value of what we were proposing. And then one of the things we wanted to ask was, what would be the types of materials that we might look at and see who was interested in using or who was interested in contributing those for review. And so we came up with a list of potential instruments that might be reviewed, and then we said, how many of you would be interested in using these? This is the teaching group now, in your teaching activities when you get we get done with this. And I've highlighted those that are more than 50%. And if you'll notice, most of those are things related to direct instruction or through direct laboratory instruction that would be used in those areas. Case studies was one that was particularly popular, and also the collection of video and audio images was something that was deemed to be useful. On the other side of the coin, if you're going to submit to this system, how many of you would be interested in submitting, and what kinds of materials would you like to submit? And it turns out that the two most popular areas for teaching for submissions here, not extension, was teaching modules and laboratory exercises. But also would note, if you look across, there was a significant number of people who were interested in contributing almost all of these types of instruments. Something that I kind of thought would be interesting to look at is, what's the demand versus the supply? And which ones of these would be in the most demand but have the least supply? That would be if I were trying to get a lot of citations or a lot of interest. That'd be where I'd be going, okay? So I subtracted the demand from the supply. So a positive number indicates things that had a much higher demand than we had a supply for. And here it's instructional videos, simulations and case studies, and then the image and video collections were what would be kind of those highest cited sort of things. So I don't know whether maybe that's something for us to think about while we're developing which instruments to first review. Maybe it's those things that would provide a kind of a boost first. Also, we looked at the same sort of things for extension and outreach, consulting activities. You'll notice that some of the instruments are a little different. For instance, leaflets and fact sheets and bulletins that weren't in the teaching side of the equation. And if you look, it's not too surprising what was popular for use out of this. It was those things that we could actually hand to clientele, such as fact sheets or bulletins that might be useful for us that we don't have in our arsenal at our home institution. Or again, it was things that were of the video or imagery side of things that might be collections that we could use. And so if you look again at what is Extension interested in submitting for review, it turns out that fact sheets and bulletins, not too surprising because they produce a lot of those, were things. But again, we had a good amount of things from most of the categories that folks were interested in submitting. What I thought was interesting, the Extension folks were much more in line with what they wanted out of the system and what they wanted to put into the system. So if you use that, there's nothing that turns out that's highly differential for the Extension side. Apparently they're more integrated than the teaching side is. One thing that did hit me on this is Extension had a much greater interest in mobile apps. Was something that hit me. So that would be of interest as it goes there. Well, we've got a system. We talked about what we might put into it, the value of it to people. And then the big question is, how do we pay for it? Okay. So we ask folks a little bit on that side of the equation about how we might finance this undertaking. So we said, if you were to submit materials for peer review, would you be willing to pay a fee in place of a page charge? Because we're not producing something that's pages necessarily. And a little over half of the folks would be willing to provide some sort of remuneration for that service. About 40% of the folks were not interested in paying for it up front in the review process. So one other way to go at it is access to the finished material and have some sort of recovery of cost from that direction. Now, I can see all the extension folks out there going, oh, wait a minute, because all the extension services are obviously housing things like bulletins, etc., that they're charging a fee for and gaining a cost recovery off of to support their programs. So obviously that wouldn't work for all types of materials that might be an outcome in the system. About 43% of the folks, when asked if they would be willing to pay some sort of fee or charge for use of the materials, indicated they would not. A slightly greater percentage said they would, but on a differential basis among the types of instruments that you might have, and a small minority wanted the fee based on the rate of access or how frequently the materials were accessed. So just some background and thoughts as we go forward and try to find a way to pay for this. So my point here is to keep this brief and just update you where we're at, and I want to kind of come to what, as a committee, we sort of came to some general conclusions earlier. Now, I don't know if they're unanimous across the group or not, but I'll try and summarize some of the things that were discussed and see what your feedback is on them. First of all, we do not want to duplicate our existing journals. We have a wonderful mechanism for outlets for paper type of peer review. We don't need to reinvent Hort Technology or Hort Science or whatever. So this needs to be only for those things that are not going to fit into our original conventional system. Okay? We, in that thought, the question originally was, would it set up in the same kind of review process as our regular journal articles would? And the thought was, it's so different that probably not. It would probably require an independent editor and an independent system of review, editorial board reviewers, etc., that were more attuned to the particular items that we're trying to provide peer review for. We also came to the conclusion, and you might have come to the same one after looking at these huge numbers of different things that we're looking at, we're probably going to have to start, if we do this, on a limited basis with those things that we think we can handle in a new system fairly readily, and then branch out to other instruments as we gain experience and become more familiar with how the process might go. And if you think about this, one of the other issues was, if you're doing this as a peer review, think about a paper. You don't write a finished paper and then hand it somebody and ask for a peer review on it. Okay? Peer review needs to occur at a stage of development that would allow for addressing the peer review's concerns and questions. So that would be much more readily done with some types of the materials we're talking about here. We can all envision how maybe a lesson plan or a bulletin, extension bulletin, could have conventional peer review done and then before the finished product comes out. It's going to be more difficult with things like instructional videos. I know Gary, you know, when we were talking about some of the extension videos that they're having, how do you peer review those? Well, you can't really take a finished product and say, oh, I don't really like the way this is done or that's done. You need to tweak this. It's too expensive. It's too difficult to go back and change that. So perhaps those items would end up being reviewed at an earlier stage where maybe it's a script or an outline of what's going to be shown, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure how we would fit that in. So there'll be some differences in how we handle these in the system. The other thing is there's going to have to be optional repository strategies. Some of these materials are going to be copyrighted extension materials that I'm sure they're not going to want us to serve off of our servers, and they're going to want those to be linked. So we might review those and then place the link that goes to the extension services servers for direct access. Other things may actually be housed on ASHS's websites or physically through ASHS. So it'll probably be a flexible system as to how they're housed. Now, back to that original question. One of the things we were starting out, if you remember, about 15 minutes ago, that we said we wanted to do was find a way to assist folks who are in that tenure and promotion ladder and having a certifiable peer review stamp on some of their non-conventional papers or products they're developing. In order to do that, one of the first things people were going to do is, well, what's your citation? So we were kind of brainstorming about ways that might be addressed, and one way might be, in addition to being able to direct them to a link to that material, would be to perhaps publish an abstract or an extended abstract describing that instrument in Hort Technology, which is already a recognized peer-reviewed journal, and that gives them a citable location that this could be recognized at. So that's kind of where, and the other committee members can correct me if I've overlooked anything or misstated anything. I know we have met a couple of times on this. And the whole point here this morning is the rest of the time to try and get your input and have you bounce questions off the committee members. So at this point, I'm going to ask the committee members to come up front with me so you can get eggs and rotten fruit, things like that, thrown at you. And serve as a sounding board for questions from the membership. So, what is your thoughts on this as far as our next move? What do you envision or what would you like to see come out of this effort? So, open it up to the floor with that. Yes? I didn't know if we were still recording this portion of it or not. Okay. Our question was, what is different about this than our previous efforts for extension publications, et cetera? Am I paraphrasing correctly? The question was, how would these differ from the e-extension materials that we're already doing, and how would that process be different? And I'll open it up to the folks who are more familiar with e-extension system.
I would say that not everybody has an e-extension.
Mary, you need to come up. They're recording them, so you have to be up here.
I don't think everybody has the option of an e-extension community of practice that they're really an active participant in. So this would be another option for people. And yet I think it varies how many people have a good peer review system through e-extension. Most of those communities of practice do, but maybe it's only one person that looked at it. It doesn't have the same level of rigor across all institutions like the publications do now.
Other questions or comments? Yes.
Are there other societies already doing this?
I'm aware of Marlowe. Dr. Rodas could probably be more familiar with it. Did you want to? If I've got all these committee members here that have expertise, I'm going to use them.
Hi. Merlot, are you familiar with Merlot? Merlot, do a search on that. That's not a single society-based initiative. That's a CIC initiative, so that institutions, multi-institutions, have as a platform Merlot database, and so you can make contributions as an individual professor to a Merlot collection. They peer review it for essentially academic integrity and is it worthy of being in Merlot as a higher education resource base. So it's not a society-based product, and its approval process is more of the, is it an appropriate, is it a valuable kind of collection? You're submitting a collection to Merlot, and so you have a collection of plant photos. Say I have a, and I'm in Merlot with Factsheet database. So they look at it more as it's an appropriate member of our collection, not can we, do we want to reject it based on some sort of criteria as to it wasn't technically up to, I mean, if the plant names are correct, they're not going to debate, did you put the wrong plant names on. So it's more of a, you submit your collection. So it's more of the after the fact. I've built one, can Merlot host it? So other societies will exploit Merlot. So there's a wide collection of these types of products already online.
Did I take it that more than answered the question?
I'll have another question.
Yes.
So are you seeing this then as mainly a place you would submit things to let other people have use of, as opposed to, for example, I don't know if they still do it, but years ago, NAFTA journals would do video reviews. They didn't take the video, they didn't keep the video, but they reviewed it more like a book review, which then you could cite to show that, yes, there are other people that saw this video.
I think the idea was to have both, and for maybe two different purposes. One was to provide a peer review material for folks for tenure and promotion. That would be more what you're kind of talking about doing there. The other would be that this would provide a range of products that some of our new folks could use in their teaching or outreach activities, and also might be a base to help draw in some non-conventional membership in terms of joining ASHS to get access to some of those materials.
I think that's good to keep both of those, because I can see very different kinds of things that someone might submit to one versus the other.
Yeah, and that was something we were trying to get at with that user versus submitter comparison as well. And I think you're right. I think that's both. Do we have other questions for the group? Yes, Richard.
Have you thought about longevity of the product itself? Because oftentimes these become dated, or they'll be posted on, in this case, if you're just doing abstract or citation, to a product that's on, say, Mississippi State's website, we take it down in 3 years, it's no longer available.
Okay. The question was there a thought given to the longevity of the materials? And, for instance, what happens when databases are taken down or materials are removed from websites? And, yes, that was something we had a concern for overall. And no, we don't have a real good answer for it, other than to say that some of our publications become a little dated as well over time, And so the idea of things evolving, but they are still available. That is a good question. Good point. So for those things from ASHS, it housed on ASHS's site, that's probably not as much of an issue. But it would be for those that wouldn't be housed there. The other thing is, what about applications that no longer have, you got a phone app that your phone won't run anymore? It's a little bit like the old computer program. So. Yeah.
The other side of that is intellectual property rights on some of these. If I develop it as part of something through Mississippi State, Mississippi State's not going to necessarily want me to just hand it over to another entity, especially if they think they can make money off of it.
Yeah. The comment was, what about property rights and patent rights and regaining the recouping costs, and that the universities or extension services might not be willing to share that. And I think that's true, and that got at the idea that some of this stuff would not be able to be housed on ASHS, when it best be able to be linked to it. And I agree, that's where it gets into how you recover the cost. Some things you might be able to, perhaps a great teaching module, somebody's willing to pay a download fee for that, or a review fee on an extension publication. It may be Mississippi State that wants to garner that. Yes, that would be, that's the differential repositories. Yes. Yeah, the comment was about co-branding and the need to make sure that we recognize not only ASHS, but the contributing institution as well. And I apologize for repeating, but they can hear. Yes. Okay.
Yes. In general, I like the idea very much, and we discussed about this before. But the challenge that I can see is that when the packages go for promotion in 10 years, lots of committee members at the department and college level, they are in the habit of counting the publications and putting the check mark. And it is always the challenge for extension people, the people that they have more extension, it is easier for researchers. How can we educate institutions about how valuable this is?
The comment was about our tenure and promotion committees and sometimes their tendency to count publications, and how does this fit into that in the education process. I think that's a very valid question, and I think like anything, over time you've got to grow that. You talk about the branding, you talk about the awareness. Will it be as easily recognized as a validation of the peer review of the system initially as it may be 10 years down the road? I don't think so. It'll probably be increase in its recognition. But one thing that was suggested to me, I brought up that fact with one of our associate deans and ran it past them and said, how do we make this a clearly different status that's peer reviewed? And that he suggested actually including it as a different section right after things like peer reviewed publications to put down peer reviewed teaching extension materials and then list your citations for it there. And so that it became a recognized category. And he seemed to think that would be something that would begin to get traction as it went up through the system. Yes?
We just redid our promotion standards, and one thing that's a little bit different now is that we have to prove that we not only did this, but it meant something to somebody. So...
Right. The question was when in the documentation is documenting impact as well as just the fact you did it, and stated much better than I did. But I think one thing that would be possible, I don't know, Neff standing at the back of the room can give us input on that, but aren't statistics like times that it's accessed and things like that available through ASHS's website? Are those kinds of hits and contacts available, or could they be made available?
How it's housed and where it's coming from.
Right. Yes. So we could do what you're suggesting and have an access rate or a number of times and show people are using it. So, yeah, or have feedback comments. Yeah. Okay. Yes?
When you talk about an abstract that would be published, are you talking about one that the author would write or the other materials would write?
sort of like a book review.
Could be either way. You bring up a good point. I personally had envisioned it was going to be much like we have small abstracts for just getting advertising out that Mike does through ASHS, kind of releases that go out on different topics. I'd envision sort of something like that, but I think what you're talking about, it might be the reviewer that could provide that. That'd be interesting. Comment was that in putting the packets together, it would be useful to have the peer reviews actually abstracted by the reviewers rather than by the authors of the materials, and would it hasten that being added to the review process. Yes. Any other comments? Have we got any administrators sitting out there? Do you want to let anybody know you're out there? give you feedback on it. I'll pick on Wayne. I see Wayne sitting out there. Wayne. Wayne, could you give us an administrator's perspective on things?
There are any times that there's a peer process, there'll be more weight given to that product. So whatever that peer process is, it's obviously going to count for more than just a submission. I just think of an abstract for a meeting. That really doesn't give you any weight for anything.
Comment was that thought that the addition of the peer process would add value to or weight to the to that as a component of the packet. Anybody else? Richard? No.
I like the idea of either being able to publish a summary or something that you could cite or include on your publication as kind of a stamp of this has been reviewed, or even if there was a for online journals where they give you a DOI number, if ASHS could keep a record of the ones that had actually gone through review, and if you could put kind of the ASHS stamp of peer review on there, you could include that as a footnote on your extension publication. You could put it as a little ending thing on your video. You could, that would be something that you could include actually on publication that the P&T committees could actually look up to verify the review process. Something, a little short line or something that you could basically stamp your document with.
Okay. The comment for the folks viewing this online was that the idea of co-branding at the end of an extension publication or a video or things where ASHS's stamp could be put on there as a validation of the peer review process that material had undergone, and T&P committees could see that as positive. I like that.
You have page charges for this? And he says no. You go to the associate dean and say page charges, and he says no. It really, I don't really have a teaching budget, so.
The question was could we revisit some of the questions about how to pay for this and discuss some of that. And so the question was, for instance, an alternative to page charges and the lack of an ability to pay that sometimes for teaching or extension where you don't necessarily have somebody you can go to and hand those bills to. By the way, I can't do that on research either, but That was the question that we were asking. About 60% of the people said they would be willing to do that, and about 40% said they would not be able to. And that's why I think it'll end up being some combination of perhaps a review charge, and if it's something that's housed through ASHS, maybe an access charge that could be made. The other question is, if this is a valuable enough service, is it that we try and keep the cost of doing that nominal, and it's something that actually is built into the ASHS budget? I don't know. Neil could probably speak to us, but I know HORT Technology now is profitable in terms of the cost of the publication versus the revenue generated. But I think it took quite a number of years before it became a positive revenue stream rather than a neutral or negative revenue stream. Am I missed?
You don't really expect me to talk to that, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we've got to recognize that there may be that initially we've got to look at ASHS saying, is this valuable enough service that we're willing to invest in it and do this, and then try and grow our streams of revenue to support it as we get a better handle on how the system's going to work.